Billy. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. And how cool is it tonight, the last Saturday of the year, and we got all these alcoholics together on a Zoom call, and it's so cool. I think, I don't know if it's random, that we have people from Point Reyes, Inverness, and Spokane all randomly here. Or maybe you guys all know each other, and you just decided to all come to the same meeting, to the same party this Saturday night. But very cool and very excited to be here. I grew up in a small town here in Northern California, and from a very early age, drinking was very much a part of just kind of growing up in that small town. And quickly, I will say my sobriety date is December 6th, 2019. Sorry, 2018. I celebrated 2 years this month, which is pretty cool. I do have a sponsor, and I also have a sponsee, which is my first time doing that, and I'm finding the whole sponsorship thing to be really cool. Actually sponsoring somebody has been just really incredible in how much you can learn by going through the book with somebody else for their first time. So that's been really a fun experience. But yeah, I grew up in a small town. First drink was when I was really young. I also with my brother, gave me some Budweisers, and we went and kicked a soccer ball around in the front yard. Then later on, with a buddy whose parents' liquor cabinet we used to raid on the weekends. And then a couple of my friends kind of went off the deep end and started to get into harder drugs. This is in like eighth grade. So I kind of stopped hanging out with them, and then really didn't drink again until, you know, sophomore year in high school, and found out that, you know, I kind of picked up right where I left off when I was drinking at a younger age, going to parties, being kind of the loud, fun, I was the class temp clown, and I was always, you know, I had that positive reinforcement. Whenever I would drink and have a good time, I got, you know, people laughed at me, and, you know, I was considered what my people might think as, like, popular, and I attributed a lot of that to my my behavior when I was drinking, and so why wouldn't I continue to drink? I loved it, and that continued for many years through high school, then to college, then after college, started earning some money, and enjoying some of the other extracurriculars that money can buy that allows you to party a little bit more. And I really just thought that's what I was passionate about. When people talk about, you know, what's your passion? Like, that was my passion, was partying. Like, I just wanted, that's all I wanted to do. And whether it was, you know, with a group of people or by myself, it didn't matter. And that's what I did. So fast forward, 15 years, and I was on a trip to I got muted there, so I had to unmute myself. A quick work trip to Las Vegas, and I was trying to control my drinking at that time, kind of like what we just shared on the in chapter 3. Just trying to control my drinking. So in an effort to control my drinking, I was going to take a flight into Vegas in the morning and fly out that night, so I wouldn't have an opportunity to go out and party with coworkers. And I didn't make my flight home because I was too drunk to get on the flight. And I ended up sleeping in McCarran International Airport with a suit jacket over my head, feeling just like a piece of shit. You know, and woke up that next morning, had to explain, you know, to my wife and why I wasn't home. She wasn't returning texts. I knew she was pissed off. She was expecting me the night before. And so I finally have to buy a new airplane ticket, get through security, go belly up at the bar, drink some more beers. And really, I was kind of like, man, I need to do something. I need to do something to show my wife I'm serious. And she was actually, had told me that she was going to leave that afternoon to take the kids to where she grew up, to her folks' house, which is coincidentally where I live now in Utah. I came home and I drove to an AA. I Googled AA, and I came in out of sheer desperation, and really to just kind of, you know, show my wife that I was serious, that I was going to really try and control my drinking. And I showed up to a meeting room. There was a person in there, and I walked in. Thankfully, there was a guy in there. I didn't know how it worked, right? I didn't know that. I thought that maybe there was just a room where there was people in 24/7. You just walk in. I didn't know that there was, like, meeting times and schedules and all that stuff. And I walked in, and thankfully, there was a guy there whose name was also Bill. And he and I chatted for about an hour. And I was not sober when we chatted, but, you know, you could tell that I needed help. He gave me a schedule. He told me to come back and check out a meeting, which I did. And, you know, it saved my life. It saved my life. It saved my marriage. And it's just been like a tremendous ride since a couple years ago. I initially started by saying I've got enough time for one meeting a week is what I said. You know, I'll come to one meeting a week, and because I've got a very busy schedule elsewhere, and I'll go to one meeting a week and get something out of it, right? And that I would do that, but I would still end up, you know, come Wednesday, I was drunk. And it was not working for me dipping a toe in. I couldn't do it that way. So I had a trip to Los Angeles. It was December 5th, and I was at the bar drinking, coming home, and I immediately, instead of driving home from the airport, I drove to El Cerrito Courage to Change. You know, we were in the Bay Area at the time, in the East Bay, and those were kind of my two home groups were El Cerrito Courage to Change, the El Cerrito Fellowship, and that was my first meeting that December 5th of a 90 and 90. And that 90 and 90 was like, you know, that just like beat it into me. And it just, helped unwire my brain. That was just so scrambled. And I learned so much from the program and from the people in the group. And, you know, one of the things that blew me away was, you know, how big our community is, how massive the AA community is. That there's so many of us out there. And it's just, you really do feel welcome, right? And you don't need to explain yourself to another alcoholic. They know where you're coming from. And so, you know, that very first meeting I showed up to, I remember the El Cerrito Fellowship was closed. It was 5 minutes after. I had a good excuse to not go to that very first meeting. And when I ended up showing up to the Courage to Change, 5 minutes later, so I missed the part with if you're within your first 30 days of sobriety, so because I showed up late. And then I spoke at the very end. I shared and I told people that I was afraid of losing my family, and because this is the first AA meeting I've ever been to. And the way the room shifted when they learned I was a newcomer and that this was the first time I've ever been in a friggin' AA meeting, it was awesome. And the people were so welcoming. A gal went and got me a chip, and they got me a book. And they just welcomed me in with open arms, and it was just immediately I felt that sense of relief. You know, I hadn't started doing any work yet, but I felt like I was home. And so, yeah, I mean, since then, it's been, you know, just a lot of learning, a lot of growth. Learning about my spiritual side of me, which I had zero of before and still, you know, don't have much of, but have more of now, which is great. Learning of this thing like faith and knowing that things are going to be okay. That's like a tremendous feeling unlike anything else for me. And just learning to be a better husband, a better father, better son, brother, everything, worker, everything that you can imagine. And it's just, you know, I say this sometimes, and I say it kind of jokingly, but AA, it's like I'm in it for the door prizes, you know? Like, it's not really all about the door prizes, but they're pretty freaking nice, you know? Being able to have those other, you know, some of the things that the surrender. puzzle of your life kind of starts to come together, you know, and instead of being blacked out on a Saturday night, you're hanging out with a group of like-minded alcoholics that are, you know, you get to learn from and share with them like I get to do tonight with all of you. Yeah, I mean, if you're a newcomer and, you know, you're not sure what this is all about, I mean, just like they say, keep coming back. It really does work. You don't know, like, what you learned today and then how you apply it to tomorrow and to the 6 months. I have been going through some stuff over the weekend, some tools, and I found my 90-day chip. And you mentioned in BK, you know, if you have 90 days, a lot of meetings will say 30 days, but 90 days. And I remember I had that 90-day chip. I got it in Orange County when I was down there for work. And I had it hanging on a knob in my car for the longest time, 90 days. And I was so proud of that chip, and I still am, right? But just like how you grow through the program and as a person, as a human being, as a man, as a woman, I mean, it just is, it's incredible. And it's the shit that you don't, that your folks don't teach you, the shit you don't learn in school. And, man, I mean, a 12-step program, I'm on 9 right now. I'm about halfway through, you know, making some amends. But, man, everybody should have these tools that we have in our tool bag. And so, thank you, NDK. So, yeah, it's just, you know, the steps is something that I'm really devoting some time to putting some work in on that. When I was living in the Bay Area and then moved up to Ukiah, I kind of lost some connection. And, you know, when this whole pandemic popped off, I realized, you know, I wanted to give my sponsor a call to remind him that he's, just let him know he's still my sponsor, type of deal. I just hadn't been in touch. And I committed to just put in work, and it's been awesome ever since then. I'm secretarying a Sunday night men's meeting. Like I said, I'm sponsoring a guy, and I started to really dedicate some time to putting in that work, and it's just been pretty cool. I'm looking forward to wrapping up the steps so I can start them over again, because it's just a process and a way of living for me now, and I feel like that, you know. I'm not getting anxious or anything. And hopefully I'm doing the right work that I need to do to, you know, build up my defense for that next time or that something bad happens so I don't pick up a drink. But, yeah, I really appreciate this group. I appreciate Matt for inviting me to come and speak with you all tonight. Yeah, I'll wrap it up right there. Thank you all.
Thank you, everybody. My name's Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank Bill A. and happy 2 years and happy 25 years to Liz. And welcome all those in your first 90 days, Chris, Karina, Christine, Jason, and Cassie. Really glad you're here. And, you know, I heard you don't have to drink even if you want to. And I wanted to drink when I got sober. I wanted to drink for a long time. I just didn't do it. And welcome everybody from out of town, all my friends. I have some sponsors here. My husband's here. We met in AA. It's a day at a time. On the air, it's just a day at a time. Because I've made a commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous, so I maintain my sobriety. And somewhere along the line, I made a commitment for my life, and I maintain it one day at a time. And I love more about alcohol, so I got sober in Los Angeles, September 19th, 1978. And this past September, I celebrated 42 years of sobriety, a day at a time, just like the newest person in the room. And, you know, when I would, sometimes when, you know, when we were in meetings, and I'd go up to a newcomer, and I'd say, how long are you sober, whatever, and they'd tell me, and then they'd say, how long are you sober? I didn't want to tell them, you know, but it's like, you know, because when I went on my first 12-step call, I had 6 months of sobriety, and the woman was drunk, and I went with a friend who had 4 years, and the woman spent all her time talking to me, because 6 months, maybe 4 years, no way can it work? And that's how I felt. You know, I got sober in Los Angeles with the best AA in the world, and I know everybody feels that way about where you got sober. And I grew up in the military, so, you know, in the place, and more about alcoholism, you know, I was taught that to look for the similarities, not the difference. Because it said, you know, on geographics, you know, I lived in geographics, so that didn't relate to me. It said, you know, we tried to drink like other men, so we drank beer and wine. I'm a blackout, violent beer drinker. Well, I guess I'm not an alcoholic. You know, there was always something that I could say, well, I guess I'm not an alcoholic, until I heard, and I think it was in my first week of sobriety, somebody said, normal drinkers don't wonder whether or not they're alcoholics. It never crosses their mind. And that's the truth. You know, I hear truths here with a capital T, and that was one of them. And the other thing that really kept me here is our leaders of our trusted service, they do not govern. Because I was brought up in the military. My dad was a cop in the military, and you can only imagine what my life was like. You know, it was very difficult. I was abused as a child, so that was very difficult. And I just realized I hadn't turned this talk over, so I just had to take a moment to do that. You know, maybe there's somebody on this call tonight that needs to know that you can have that history and you can not drink. And so when it gets to the point where it says in that no matter what happens, we're at fault, we're responsible. No, we're not. That at least, because that's my experience, I had no responsibility, it's not my fault, there's no amends that I need to make for it. So, I might be a little controversial, but this is my story, and this is my sobriety, this is my journey. So I was just, you know, I grew up, in high school I was in the Bay Area, so what I would do is I would make beads, and I would hop in the car and hitchhike on the weekends to the Hate. And smoked dope. I did cocaine. Luckily, I never shot drugs. I'd probably be dead. I just fall in love with junkies like my husband. But he's sober a long time. I just fall in love with them, you know. And I don't know what that's about, but there you go. And, you know, I got myself into very heavy situations. I've had guns put in my face. I mean, you look at me now, or you see me at work, or you see me in La Leche League, which is an international breastfeeding organization. I was the leader then, and I'm thinking to myself, but these women only knew. You know, I'm a blackout bar drinker. I'm a violent drunk. You know, and I carried that behavior into Alcoholics Anonymous. I just didn't stop my behavior, you know, when I got sober. But I hitchhiked up and down both coasts. I ended up, you know, after high school, I went to college for a minute and left college and went into VISTA, which is like Peace Corps. And I was there the year after Martin Luther King was killed. And I got into some heavy stuff going on there. And, you know, heavy situations I put myself in. Living in Puerto Rico, again, I ended up in a place that the guy there, the only guy who spoke English, said, if you weren't with this guy, you wouldn't get out of here alive. You know, and I forget that stuff, where I came from, what my life was like. And so I did what anybody would do. I just drank that high until I could leave there. And the way the guy told me he wanted to see me the next day was he put a gun in my face. I mean, I say that, and I feel like I'm over outside my body telling you a story about somebody else. Because how could that happen? How could a young woman be in that situation? Because if you told me you had cocaine, and you told me you were paying for the booze, I would go anywhere. You know, so like, you know, I might not have paid for it with money, but I paid for it with my self-respect, with my dignity. So it took me a long time into Alcoholics Anonymous to bring myself up into a place where that I could feel all right about myself. And sometimes, still to this day, you know, I can, you know, sometimes to this day, I can just beat myself up. You know, an old boyfriend, one time I was talking about how he took off his boot, pretended to beat himself in the head. you know, because that's what I would do to myself. Like we say, nobody could do to me what I do to myself. Nobody could talk to me the way that I trash and trash myself, still to this day. So the difference between me and the newest person in the room is the insanity doesn't come as often, and it doesn't stay as long. That's the hope I have for you. And you can have an incredible life in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was in the movie industry, and I used to go to a gym, and I would leave the gym like at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would go next door to the bar. I didn't close the bar because it was 1 in the afternoon. That's a long time. You know, usually when I'd close the bar, I'd get there like at 7 or 8. But when I was going to the gay bars in Boston, I would go to, you know, I would be in the bar. We would be in the women's bar, and we'd go across the street called the other side to the men's bar because we could just, they'd be dancing, and we'd just be drinking their beer. They just thought we were the cutest things, and we were. And I got to the point where I moved about within walking distance of the bar because I couldn't get home. You know, I couldn't get home because I was so messed up. When the bar closed and the lights came on and I'm looking at the person next to me thinking, whoa. So that's my alcoholism. That's the level that I went to. I didn't have a life. Like, I used to laugh. Now I'm not laughing about it now that I'm 17. But actually, I think I'm 71 now. People say, well, I'm retired. And I used to laugh and say, well, I got my retirement out of the way early when I was young. But it's not funny anymore because I'm still working. You know what I mean? It's like when I was young, I was like all over the place, you know, and a really good indication of my drinking was when I first got that Social Security form, and it tells you the years and how much money you made, I'd have zero. I'd have $100. I'd have $1,000. How did I live? How did I support myself? Any way I could, you know, with anybody who would take me in, and heavy price to pay, and, so I was drinking my way to this gym in Los Angeles, and I had been in this gym, like I told you, and I was in the film industry, and so I went to this gym, and this guy, he told me that for months he was telling me, if you want to stop drinking, come see me. I never heard it. You know what I mean? When you get sober, people tell you things, and it's like, I never heard it. So the one time I heard it, you know, I heard it from him, and I ended up, actually before the gym, I was at a party, and I had, like I said, I was working my way through the theater group, and the story from the guy, because 2 days later, I ended up calling him to make amends. That's how insane I was when I first got to AA, and his story was that I woke up in the middle of the night, and I'm breaking glass, and he was afraid for his life that I was trying to stab him. And then I'm up and down the street looking for my car, and I'm 28 years old. Yeah, I'm 28 years old. And I went to some friends' house, and I described to them what I now know as incomprehensible demoralization, where I was telling them, you know, what a mess I was. And I went home and put a blanket on the window and took a half a Valium. That must have been all I had. And a Miller Lite, which I never drank. And then that night I went to a party in Hollywood, and this friend walked in, and her story was she was 45 minutes away in bed with her cats, and a mutual friend said, let's go to this party in Hollywood, and she thought about me. So she got dressed, and she drove to this party, and she walked in, and everybody said, Connie, you look wonderful. What's happened? And or what's going on? She said, I've got 35 days of sobriety, and I joined AA. Now, she used to drink with me. She used to try to get me drunk and take advantage of me, but I could drink anybody under the table. And I'm probably still proud of that. And by the time she got around to me, I grabbed her hand, and I had been saying I was an alcoholic for years, but it was different. I said, Connie, I think I'm an alcoholic. And she took me home, 45 minutes to the beach, and put me on her couch, which we don't get to do very much anymore. And she 12-stepped me. Now, Connie never got any long-term sobriety, but I did. You know, she carried the message to me, smoking pot for 2 days. So if we don't self-medicate here. So to me, it's booze and no self-medication. Whatever you do between you and your doctor is not none of my business. I don't have a public opinion about it. It's between you and your sponsor, your doctor. Anyway, so then I go to the gym the next day. And I said something to the guy, and he told me about a meeting, and I met him, and it was an hour drive. And I met him for dinner, a bunch of people, and then I went to the meeting, and I cried the entire meeting. And I said I was an alcoholic for the first time, and on the drive home over the 405 freeway, I was crying so hard that I had to pull over. I couldn't see the drive. And that started my journey in AA, and I smoked pot for 2 days until I heard you don't do that, self-medicate. And I haven't had a drink of drugs since, over 42 years now. And I have been an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous for all that time. I have had commitments all the time, not because I'm, under any virtue. I remember one time I organized prisons, meetings in the women's prison in Rhode Island. It wasn't organized like that, so I did that. And I was at a day conference and somebody was praising me. And I go, and I said, I'm just one of the sicker ones. You know what I mean? Because I can't get too much praise. I'm just a sick alcoholic. And I need to continue to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to stay sober, period. And, you know, there's a lot of things that have happened. My husband and I fell in love. You know, he had a girlfriend, and it was difficult, and she stood up at our home group and publicly called us out, and, you know, two people were there, probably, at that meeting, my home group in Venice, where the debris meets the sea, and actually, we started a meeting that's an AA format, but it's a reunion meeting, and there are people that are, you know, sober in their 40s and their 30s at that meeting that are still sober from that group. And it was a very powerful group because we were all wild, we were all nuts. We used to have huge Christmas Eve parties, we had huge dances, you can imagine, in LA, and because we all wanted to stay sober. You know, we would get up after dancing half the night, we would go to a recovery house out in the valley for like an 8 o'clock meeting. This friend would drag us out there, and all the people in the recovery house would be sleeping, and we'd be talking, and we didn't drink, you know, and we didn't use. And, you know, my husband and I have been married 35 years, just so much. I had a lot of infertility going on. Surgeries, and then when at one point two people from AA were in the waiting room with Charlie from Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was at Cedar Sinai, and the operator would call and say, "You've got a long distance call." I said, "I'm on one," you know, because the people that called and supported us like we do with each other in AA. And then our wonderful daughter was born, and now she's 32 years old, and she's married. She's married to this wonderful man that she met in grad school at Cal, and they lived in Egypt for a few years. So this year is the first time in a while that we've had Christmas with them. We celebrated yesterday, and happy belated Hanukkah for all who celebrate, and happy Kwanzaa, and happy New Year. And so we were able to celebrate because they're in our little bubble. And there are many years that we weren't with her. She was in Botswana for 4 years. So I've had, because she got her passport, I got a passport after she did. And been to meetings all over the world, literally. And so I went to Botswana, and I found out, I talked to a guy before I got there, and I went to this meeting. And it was amazing. Through a series of coincidences, I knew that the choir was meeting upstairs in this location. So when I got to the meeting, it turns out that the guys, we couldn't meet up in the room because the choir was meeting. So we met downstairs, and it was a big, you know, hassle, and we had to get chairs and everything. And then they started the meeting, and I was the only woman there. And so all of a sudden, sudden the choir starts singing, so you couldn't have a meeting. So we went outside and we're walking around the building, and one person's complaining about this and the other person's complaining, I'm in a real AA meeting now, And we sat down and one person was having problems with his girlfriend and another person couldn't stay sober and another person, something I can't remember what was going on, money situation that was going on. And then a guy ended up taking me home. And I'm with myself and I'm in a room full of black men in Botswana. And they all spoke English luckily, and it was incredible. An incredibly powerful meeting. And then another time we were in Egypt and they have more, NA has a higher, because it's illegal to drink there. But if people are drinking. But Narcotics Anonymous has a higher, more people go to Narcotics Anonymous. So when we were there, we went to an NA meeting and an AA meeting, which we had gone to the year before. So we take off and it's at night and the cab driver doesn't speak English. And we found out, because I called the hotline, where some landmarks were, and so we're driving an hour, and the traffic in Egypt is insane. There's no traffic lights, there's no lines, everybody drives fast and honks and everything, and it's like a little unsettling for me. But this is going to any lengths to stay sober. This is what this is, going to any lengths to stay sober. And this is the week before our daughter's wedding in the Red Sea. We ended up getting to a place, and we looked, and there was a light, like, down this alley, and the alley had all this debris in it, and we walked, we got out, it was like, how are we going to get a cab to get home, who knows? We walked out, we went down this alley, and then I saw a young person, and they walked into this doorway, and I go, hey, do you know where the NA meeting is? And he said, follow me, and I went in, and he moved off, but I went up to the third floor, and a guy came in behind him and took us up to the meeting. There were about 20 people in the room. And then it was okay. And then we were being taken care of. And then one of the guys from the meeting took us home. And people called us and we texted them since then. And that's Alcoholics, that's the program. And then 3 days later, we were in an AA meeting with them closer to the hotel. So being taken care of by the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, we had a hard time with our daughter between middle school and high school. She was put into a mental hospital. The hardest night of my life was leaving her locked up in the middle of the night and walking out with my husband. And I was sobbing. This is the middle of the night, Saturday night, middle of the night, and the next day was our home group. Now, I never talked personally, and I never got into the details of why and the wherefores. But as far as then, it became me and my sobriety. So we showed up in our home group at 10 o'clock, having hardly slept, and I talk about it. And this is what came from me. I was afraid that we had not stopped the progression of alcoholism. Wait a minute. I thought, we're in AA. We're sober umpteen years. We're both active in AA. What happened? So two people came up to us, and one of them particularly said to me, the same thing happened to me when I was your daughter's age, and the difference was that my parents took me home, you took your daughter to get help. So then it made it okay. Oh, okay. Okay. And then it didn't stop there. There was another situation where she and I were driving, and things were said, and I pulled over, and I called the hospital, and I drove her to the hospital, and I was listening to me, and very, very painful time for quite a while, because it's like one of my favorite things in the book is like the guy comes up and the hurricane has completely destroyed everything, and he comes out from being inside the bunker or whatever, and he looks around, he goes, oh, nothing wrong here, Mom, the wind stopped blowing. Well, the wind stopped blowing, but there was debris everywhere, and it needed to be addressed, and we did that. And as a result of that, I have been able to be with families who have gone through a similar situation because they know who to call, because I've talked about it in AA. get somebody to come and pick up their daughter and take her to a camp because they could no longer deal with what was going on with her. And when I was new in AA, I talked to a friend, she had 4 years, and I was telling her what was going on, and I said, I don't know why I'm going through this. And she said, because there's going to be a time when a woman's going to come into Alcoholics Anonymous and be going through the same thing, and you're going to be able to talk to her and walk through with her and let and bear witness to what's going on with her and show her that you can go through her and not drink. And my answer to that was big deal. Well, that is the biggest deal. That is the biggest deal. Because I have had now 42 years of living sober, and a lot of things I've just highlighted, a lot of things have happened. I mean, my husband and I have had hard times and beautiful times, and we're in a really beautiful time right now. Part of the reason is because he felt like he needed to go see his brother before we got on the latest lockdown. Because his brother's got a lot of mental issues and whatever, and his brother's wife are moving in Indiana. So he went to Indiana to help him. And with 3 days, he got sick, which he thought was the flu. And within 4 or 5 days, he was diagnosed with COVID. And I just, when he called me and told me, I just burst into tears. And, you know, he was very sick for 3 weeks to the point where we didn't know. You know, he went to the emergency twice, and they said, you know, we really want to keep you, but we're reserving the rooms for the critically ill. So the good news was he wasn't critically ill, but for me, I wanted him in the hospital because I wanted him to be taken care of. I wanted somebody to be helping him. And he didn't have a bed that worked, and he didn't have this and that, so we just, my daughter and her husband and I just started sending him vitamins and, you know, sending him a bed top and, you know, doing all that stuff. And then I posted it on Facebook, and then I talked about it in AA, and you wouldn't believe the response from people. I mean, Thanksgiving, I was on the phone for hours, because people were calling and supporting me as I was supporting him. And he couldn't read, he couldn't even sit up at the computer. So at night, I would read to him what people had written in on Facebook, on text, and then I would, when people would stay at meetings, I copied them out of the chat and I put them on, you know, I copied them into sheets so I would read to him, and people would call me and I would talk to them about what was going on. And then we started a caring bridge so that I could daily update, and then everybody who wanted to could get on there and read it. And the outpouring of love and support literally from all over the world, because my brother and his husband live in France. You know, family members that our son-in-law, who's Egyptian, his two of his brothers went through COVID that we were afraid for. And so I'm on a women's meeting. I go to a women's meeting on Friday in Los Angeles because my sponsor goes there. Because I want to see my sponsor once a week. And I go to this meeting, and there's a woman that comes on and says, you know, my father-in-law has got COVID, I'm worried about, or my stepfather has got COVID, I'm worried about my mother, I don't, you know, she's talking. I go, oh, when I was 3 months sober, this woman said, you're going to go through stuff, and you're going to see how you can support other people. So I went, oh, like a light bulb went off, and I put in the chat to her, I wrote to her privately, I haven't heard from her, but that's okay. Because she knows that I'm available, and anybody else knows, now you all know, that I'm available, that if you go through something, because it wasn't close to us in West Marin, now it is. Now there's other people that we know who've gotten COVID, and it's, you know, it's difficult, it's very hard, and then Charlie had to be quarantined when he got home, so I got a porta potty, and we set up an outdoor shower, and I got my refrigerator. I went into action because that's what I could do. And all of you supported me so that I could support him. And I'm taking a few days off at the end of the year because it's been really tough. It's been really tough. What are you going to do, drink? No, that's my epitaph. It's like, I didn't think about drinking because I'm on this meeting tonight. It's almost, 9 o'clock, so I've got 3 more hours, and then I probably am not going to drink tonight. You know, and that's the deal. You know, so when you call me up, when somebody calls me up, when a sponsor calls me up, or any friend or anything, and they're going through something, I listen to it, I bear witness to it, and then at some point in the conversation, I have a responsibility to move it into the solution. Because that's what was given to me. Donald Madden, he'd say, get off the phone, put in a dime, 1978, and call two people and see how they're doing. And I get off the phone and I go, a few expletives, and I put in a dime and I call somebody. How are you doing? Because I was desperate, because I didn't want to drink, you know, and because I'm not beyond taking a drink. So when COVID hit, I had 2 or 3 years of experience at work with Zoom. Why? So that I could start Zoom meetings in West Marin. And then it got to the point where I was waking up almost every morning to open the meeting, and I went, a moment of clarity. Let's start a Point Reyes Station Zoom meeting. All the groups decided, good idea. They paid for it. We started the Zoom meeting, and then I had tutorials, and I taught people Zoom, and now every single secretary has their own access to the meetings that we have. We have 5 meetings in Point Reyes Station, and, it's being of service, it's into action when there's nothing else to do. You know, when there's nothing else to do. And the other thing is, like, with Dr. Bob and my husband add something, but, he said, intense work with an alcoholic will save the day. And that's been the truth since then, and it's the truth for me now. So my belief in God is, I don't believe in God, religion, praying, all of that. Although I do love the music in church, and I do love the chanting and all of that. That's not what I'm saying. But what I believe in is one drunk talking to another. When I was afraid, how can I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous because I don't believe in God? How can I? And people supported me through that, as I was listening in the Moody Blues Question of Balance and cussing God out, whatever. But I've never, never not believed in one drunk talking to another, which is the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if there's anybody who's, there must be somebody on the meeting because I don't know why it came to mind. It's one drunk talking to another. And also, this has never left me. As a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would not trade places with anybody in the world. Thank you very much for letting me speak tonight, and thanks, Matt, for asking.